We are very lucky to have UW Extension offices in all of our counties here in the state of Wisconsin, and a lot of our best Garden Talk guests are Extension Horticulture Educator, and today is no exception. Lisa Johnson with us, UW Extension Horticulture Educator. She's out of Dane County, and she specializes in horticulture education for the home gardener, works with the Master Gardener Program, and here to answer your questions when you call in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show post your question, comment, or if you got a garden photo, we'd love to see that as well. And Lisa, always great to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry.
Would it work better if I turned on your microphone?
There we go. Probably would, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Larry.
Now we've got it. Okay. Well, here we are. How's your garden looking?
It's looking a little tattered this year. It's been a tough year, you know, for gardeners and farmers and anybody trying to grow anything outside.
I actually was reading an article, was it in the State Journal, Wisconsin State Journal, the other day about tomatoes, that because of the drier conditions, tomatoes, sort of like grapes, have gotten a more intense flavor this summer, they're saying?
Yeah, when you have been able to produce them. We had a period of time where the night temperatures have to be above 55, but if they get too hot at night, then they don't produce either. Tomatoes have had a tough year too, but now that we're starting to get some rain and moderating temperatures and we're still a little drier, yeah, you're right. We are getting some nice, juicy, sweet tomatoes.
Yeah, most of mine were smaller this year, it seems like. I didn't get any great big ones.
Massive ones, yeah.
No. Well, we have lots of callers online to visit with you, and certainly you can join in if you have a question for Lisa. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. Give us a call with your questions and comments. As we look at this time of year, what are you seeing as anything, any sort of critical thing we ought to be thinking about as we get to this time of the summer?
Well, things that I normally would be talking about are not so big of an issue this year, but something that people are talking about and I'm getting a lot of calls about are lawn care, because our lawns really took a beating.
Yeah.
And so people are calling about, well, should I seed? Should I sod? What do I do about fertilizing? Should I aerate? So there's a whole mess of issues dealing with that. And one thing is that some people haven't had so much of an issue with Japanese beetles this year because it was so dry. Other people are still having issues. The more you irrigate it, of course, the better the beetles liked it.
Right.
So.
And we had a new lawn this year, so we were, which we seeded seeded last fall. So we actually did a lot of watering.
Yeah.
Frankly, we had to.
I lost it all.
We'd lost it all. So yeah. It looks good. And we did a few more. Actually, we did have a few more Japanese beetles than we did in the year previous. But not bad. I was, even though we have all these grapes growing along the side of our lot line there were...
Well, there's always next year.
there were a few in there.
We'll come back next year.
Well, Bud in Wausau has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Bud.
Hi, good morning. I've been waiting for this program for a time. I have got a Fireside Delicious apple tree in my backyard that I planted about 12 years ago. It's about as big now as it's ever going to be. First couple of years, I didn't have any problem with worms in the apples, and of course it was a young tree, and I didn't get many, but they were beautiful apples. Then I got into these these moths or whatever that come around and plant their eggs, and I've got a bird feeder and squirrels that live in my yard and some chipmunks, and I don't spray poison on anything. But this year, like everybody else around, I guess, the blooms came real early because of the crazy weather, and
right.
Then we had that frost, and all the blooms died, and I haven't got a single apple on the tree.
Aww.
What I'm wondering now, they told me previous years when I tried to figure out how to get rid of those things. They said, well, be sure to pick up all the apples that drop, because these worms burrow into the ground under the tree, and then they come back in the spring. And so if you now there weren't any apples to for, you know, the worms to burrow down in, perhaps I'm going to have a year where I won't have any problem, because when they come out of the ground this spring, there weren't anything to feed on, so maybe they all left me. But is there anything I can do, like putting coffee grounds or ashes or lime or anything around that tree on the ground that would discourage, if there were worms living, you know, that want to come out next spring and give me a problem? Is there anything I can do short of poisoning around there?
Boy, since you've cleaned up all of the fallen fruits from last year, I really don't think that there's much else that you need to do at this time. Now, if you have crab apples growing nearby or some other host tree that they might have been...
Well, my neighbor does. She's got a crab apple tree right across the fence, about 50 feet away, as a matter of fact.
Try to get over there and
take care of those. It's possible that all of your codling moth or apple maggot may have migrated over there. I wouldn't though suggest using coffee grounds or anything like that to try and control the problem. I don't think that'll probably help you out very much. You know, one thing that you can do is do you have internet access?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a publication that the Department of Ag puts out that's called the Wisconsin Pest Bulletin. And if you Google that, Wisconsin Pest Bulletin...
How did you spell that name of that bulletin again?
It's called the Wisconsin Pest Bulletin.
Oh, P-E-S-T.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And the bulletin comes out every week. You can subscribe to it for free, and it will tell you about populations of fruit insects that are in your area and whether they're in their first generation or second generation. And it gives you an idea of what the thresholds are for treatment. You know, there are things that you can use, like kale and clay, which is an organic product that actually some of it is used in toothpaste and kaopectate and some other things like that. So if you have, you know, continuing issues, there are organic products that that you can use if it continues to be an issue for you. But you might get away with a not-so-bad year next year, since you didn't have anything for them to feed on.
Yeah, and we'll actually put a link up to that on our Facebook page right now.
Yeah, it's a great bulletin.
Amanda's going to do that, so we'll get that up right, as a matter of fact, right now, bud. So if you want to, or anyone else, if you want to go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, we'll get you a link to that. And, yeah, that's a really valuable.
Oh, it's incredible. I'm so glad that they've been doing it for a number of years, and they have people from orchards and farmers and so on around the state that make reports, and our specialists also make reports about what's happening in the area. So it's a good place to go for information about new pests that are coming in, and I just highly recommend it.
Thanks again, Bud, for calling, and good luck to you. Bridget in Cataract, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Bridget. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm so glad you guys are on the air. I have wild hazelnuts on my property, and I read that you can make a hedgerow out of them, but they're looking pretty sad this year because I don't water them out in the woods, and I'm wondering if I can transplant them this fall to start the hedgerow where I can actually control the nutrients in the water. And also, my wild raspberries did great where my civilized raspberries were just abysmal. Can I transplant the wild ones in with the...
You'll probably move them right into a spot where they don't like it, and they'll be...
Yeah. Well, the problem... is that often the wild raspberries carry a virus that is bad for your so-called civilized raspberries. So I would not put the two anywhere near each other, if at all possible. The other thing is that unless the ground has been watered around the area where you're transplanting from and transplanting to, I think I'd probably wait to do your transplanting until next spring. Things have been under such stress this year that I'm just afraid that you may not get the best take in terms of having the plants establish themselves before winter. I should also caution you that although hazelnut is a wonderful crop, it is a thicket former. So while it will form a hedge, it's a very wide hedge and it tends to keep spreading. We have some around the teaching garden at my office, and usually the rabbits enjoy pruning down the new shoots during the the winter and early spring. So that's another clue for you. When you do your transplanting, if you do it in spring, make sure that you put some chicken wire around them so that the rabbits can't get at them.
There you go. Thanks, Bridget.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate
it. Great plant, though.
Tom and Stoddard. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Yes, I have a question about my rhododendron. I usually, I did to the summer, throw some water on it about weekly, but I usually always cover it with a screening, wood screen type thing to give it some partial shade, and I didn't do that until maybe late July, and it started having its leaves shrivel up, and there's not much that's looking green there anymore. Do I have a chance to still save it? I just maybe hope that it still has a few things alive in spring?
Yeah, I take it this is an evergreen-type rhododendron rather than one of the deciduous types?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't do any pruning on it for sure until spring. Keep it watered. That's too bad. You might have a chance, but usually once those things start losing leaves, it's iffy. I would say that, you know, the more you can baby it along, the better its chances are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You may have some regeneration of leaves in the spring once we have a decent moisture content, though.
Yep, there you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And we have Jerry in Eau Claire next. Let's go there. Hi, Jerry. Thank you for calling.
Hello. What can you tell me about dealing with an infestation of aster yellows?
Oh,
that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I can tell you my sympathies, first of all.
Yeah, that's mad.
Yeah, it is, and unfortunately, it's a fatal disease. It's called a phytoplasma, and aster yellows is transmitted by sucking insects such as aphids and leaf hoppers and the like, and we often see it on things such as coneflowers and cosmos, but we also see it on lettuce and even some things that are not actually in the aster family. The best thing you can do, and I hate to tell you this and be the bearer of bad news, but is to dig up the infested plant and get rid of it. Don't compost it, but get rid of it.
Do I need to get the roots and all?
Yes. Yeah, as much as possible, anyway, just so that it won't return and provide an inoculum source for other sucking insects to feed on and distribute the phytoplasma around your plants. We have a great fact sheet on it, by the way. Brian Huddleston from the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. If you have online access, if you Google PDDC, that's Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, PDDC, you should be able to find that under plant diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So is the area where these plants are off limits to these type of plants now from now on?
Well, no, not necessarily. It doesn't spread through the ground. It stays in the plant's system. If you're able to control the insects, of course, that helps. But it's not something that's going to hang around in the environment, really.
Oh, okay. Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And by the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or even better yet, go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, a comment, or a photo there. We've got a great photo up right now we'll be talking about in just a minute with a giant sunflower. Lisa Johnson, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Amanda Magnus, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lisa Johnson, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Garden Talk. Lots of callers online. Bonnie in Mount Horeb emailed to say, I have two raised beds and all my plants roasted in them this year. And I also planted strawberries. They died. Any suggestions to keep the dirt cooler?
Yeah, that, boy, in a year like this, that is really a tough question. You can use, you can mulch with clean straw, put a couple 3 inches on top. You can also layer like one layer of newspaper and then put the hay or, well, preferably straw on top of it. Mulch is pretty much the answer to that. And, of course, keeping things as well watered as possible. I know my raised beds, too, had issues this year with trying to keep things moist.
Yeah, absolutely. Karen in Racine, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about ferns. I wish I had a Latin name for these ferns. I think they're just woodland ferns. And I've used them for years against my back lot line, nice protected shady, and I don't water that. I sort of try to take a hard line view. What nature is what nature does. So I haven't watered, and then those ferns have like virtually been burnt into the ground, like melted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Back next year.
Have you looked at the crowns, the area where the leaves come out of?
Yes. What should I be looking for?
Okay. If you find any little hard, round fiddleheads, that's where the new leaves are going to come from next year. If you find that the crowns are all papery and that there's no hardness to it at all, then you've probably lost them. But they should be, at this point in time, kind of starting to form a little bit of lumpiness anyway for the new ferns to come out of next year.
Wow.
So if you find that, then you're probably okay. I would, I understand your hardline view, but if you do find the knobs and it is still dry, you might want to throw a little water on them.
Yep.
To try and keep them alive for next year.
Yes, at this point in the summer, I'm thinking, oh, what I should have done is water the poison.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, my mom's ferns did the same thing in an area where she forgot to water, and I've looked at them, but not too closely yet, but I think they will probably come back if they receive a little bit of water between now and frost.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Karen, for calling. Sue in Waukesha emailed us, we have lots of Roma tomatoes on the vine that are green. Will they turn red by the end of the season? Boy, we've been eating a lot of Romas in our yard.
I wonder if these were planted late, because I would have expected the Romas to have done their thing already. But
we're pretty much at the end of the Romas in our tomatoes. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, I would say that probably because we're still getting night temperatures over 55, that we will probably still see enough heat for them to ripen. You know, we've still got at least a month, if not a month and a half. So I would think we would still get production.
Andrew in Madison sent us a cool picture. This is another one. Go to my Facebook page if you can. If you're on, if you can go to the Facebook page, be online, go there to the Larry Mueller Show and take a look at this.
That's a monster sunflower.
That is a monster sunflower. It looks like one we've got in my neighborhood, actually. But this one has ants, several ants on the top leaves. I've eaten many lower leaves. What can I do to help this plant?
Well, it's really unusual that ants would be eating the foliage. Usually,
I doubt it.
Yeah, I'm wondering, too, if you've actually seen the ants eating this, or whether you're just assuming that damage that you're seeing is caused by the ants. Larry was saying earlier that he thought perhaps that aphids might be what the ants are after, and I would agree with that. They may be feeding on the honeydew that the aphids are producing if you have aphids on the sunflower. So take a close look. You might need a ladder to do so.
Yeah.
That is one big plant. And the damage on the lower leaves could be caused by slugs or earwigs or any number of critters. So let us know if you actually saw the ants in action doing this, or if it is possible that it's something else causing the problem.
I bet they were after aphids. And there's not a lot you can do about that, frankly. I mean, this time of the year.
Yeah, this time of year, there's not much you can do. If you can find the ant nest, of course, you can poison the ants. But not much.
Not much. Beth in Green Bay. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. Yes, I planted pumpkins earlier in the year, and about 2 weeks ago, they all turned orange. And is there anything I can do to keep them until October? Or?
Oh, yeah, that's a tough. It's going to be a problem for a lot of people, I'm afraid.
I think it was the hot weather that pushed the development of the pumpkins much farther ahead than we would have normally expected. I really doubt that you're going to be able to keep them through October. I'm sorry to give you the bad news there, but I take it they're still in the field, right?
They're in the garden, and they're still on the vine. Some of the vines have already started to die.
So I'd
say leave them there and see if that will keep them, a little bit longer.
I'd leave them on the vine.
Yeah, they're certainly going to keep longer on the vine than they are once you harvest them.
Okay.
But probably middle of September at the most is about what you can hope for.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. That's a problem a lot of people are going to have with their pumpkins.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens this year with that.
We have some open lines, finally. Join in with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. We love to hear from you. Larry Mueller here with my guest Lisa Johnson, Dane County Home Horticulture Educator. Great to have her along, and thank you for listening in. And Janet in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently moved into a new house, and I have neighbors that have a buckthorn tree that I heard, and the branches kind of come over into my yard, and I've heard that those droppings can be kind of toxic. I was wondering what I could do.
Well, buckthorn is an invasive species.
Yeah.
So you might want to encourage your neighbor to get rid of the tree to begin with, if at all possible.
Actually, someone was telling me how invasive it is, and she came out and she said, she just loves it. It's really pretty, and so I don't think I'm going to get any help on that end.
We do have a fact sheet just
Just in case
you need ammunition, there's lots of information at the DNR and many other places about how invasive it is. Now, if it were a male tree and not producing the berries, that would be one thing. But since it's female and producing the berries, the birds just love them, and you're going to get.
She's spreading buckthorn
everywhere.
All over
She's
the
like
place.
The typhoid Mary of. That the tree really should technically
go.
Should go. But I understand that, you know, there's not much you can do about that. As to the berries being toxic, they do have a cathartic effect on birds. I'm not sure whether they are edible for people. I doubt it because of that. But I'm not aware of any poisoning issues.
Oh, no, I wanted to make sure that I don't get little buckthorn trees growing on the berry.
You do have the right to, you know, cut off limbs that are hanging over your property.
Oh, okay.
So
anything over your property line
is fair game. So, yeah, but you will be getting, because everywhere the birds eat the berries, they're going to drop them. And that's how it is. That's its primary means of spread is by birds.
Oh, okay.
So try and do an education job on her. Get that publication and show her damage.
I'll get a couple of those and put it under.
I just take it right to her and talk to her about it. Just say, look, you're really spreading.
Yeah, particularly if you have a natural area near you, like an arboretum or a woodland. These trees are really doing major damage to woodland areas. They outcompete our native plants and really, really do a lot of environmental damage. And she can call me and talk. I am happy to talk to her about it.
Mm-hmm. Okie dokie. Well, thank you very much. I'll let, you know, her know, and hopefully we can clear it up.
Yeah, there are many other ornamental trees that have berries that are far, far better choices.
Yep. Yes. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Thanks, Janet, for calling. We have Mary and Nina online next. Hi, Mary.
Hi, we recently bought a new house last November. Luckily, the previous owners were wonderful and took down all of the buckthorn that they had in the woods area. But we have a very nice garden area that we really didn't have any idea of what was in it. And there was this contraption set up with, it just looked like kind of a stump. And then there were three wires on the top and another wire, and we could not figure out what the heck it was for until all of a sudden, you know, in the middle of this summer, we have these humongous grapevines all over our garden area.
Ah.
And apparently that was to train the grapevines.
Yes.
What we're wondering is, can we cut those back and then hopefully train them next year?
Well, the best time for pruning grapes is actually in March.
Okay.
And we have a wonderful publication at the Learning Store site. If you Google learningstore.uwex.edu, we've got a whole publication on how to do the training, when to do the training, how to do the pruning. And also, let's see, where are you in?
Nina.
Oh, okay. I was gonna suggest you come over to the West Madison Ag Station because they've got a table grape and wine grape demonstration there, but that's probably a bit of a trek for you. But anyway, I would definitely suggest doing the pruning in March and checking the publication out ahead of time so that you know how to do it. You prune it back to just a few buds, and then you can train it on the wires.
My friend of mine got that publication. This is some years back, and was absolutely amazed. It just like completely turned their grapevines
production
around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we moved in November, I mean, there was no green foliage on it. There was, I mean, it literally just looked like a couple of bare sticks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in the fall, do we cut back all of this year's growth?
Typically, they recommend you do it in March.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so they apparently did it sooner than.
Than they probably should have.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll make a difference in your production in the future if you prune it at the correct time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Here's an interesting, from my Facebook page again, we have Daryl said with a picture of a squash. I did not plant these. They were volunteers. I have no idea if they're squash or gourds. What do you think?
Well, I think that I remember Karen Delahoe always talking about volunteer cucurbits of various kinds that you can get. It takes 12 or more visits by a bee to pollinate a squash. And so the squash that you eat, if you leave the seeds in the ground, you can get very interesting sorts of cucurbits growing. They may be edible. They may be not so edible. This one looks like a hybrid of some kind to me. I don't know whether I'd care to eat it or not. That's very common, though, to get volunteer squash and gourds. It looks like a hybrid to me. It's kind of pretty.
It's kind of pretty. You know, I was talking with Patty Lowe yesterday, who is a Ho-Chunk, and she was telling me about the discovery of some mud balls that go back about 700 A.D., and they inside these mud balls, the natives had put seeds.
Oh!
And they'd use the mud balls as a way to preserve the seeds.
Oh!
And they were squash seeds, and the person who found them took some of them and planted them and got this most wonderful squash.
Wow.
That were preserved for all those hundreds and hundreds of years.
That is amazing.
I have to have her on sometime to talk about that.
Yeah.
The whole story behind that, because it's really a cool story. And you look at the hermetically sealed places that we've got how to preserve seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And, let's make a mud ball. And
It's amazing that those survived.
Oh, man. Well, Margaret in Appleton has a question for you. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I have bindweed or windweed. I'm not sure which it's called, but it winds around various stems of plants and stifles them.
Yes.
And its root system goes down at least 12 inches, if not more, and travels underground for long distances. What's the best way to eradicate it?
Well, the best way to eradicate it is to, first of all, disentangle all the tendrils off of whatever plant it is currently trying to strangle to death, and then follow the stems back to the ground, cut them back so that they're like 4 inches above the ground, and then on the remaining leaves and stems, very carefully take some Roundup and paint it with a kid's paintbrush onto the stems and leaves, and that should take care of the plant.
Yeah, I keep on doing that, and then it pops up somewhere else.
Yeah, I know.
You have to keep at it.
Right, yeah. It is a really tough one to get rid of. It's considered a noxious plant, and it's on some invasive lists. You might try, if Roundup isn't working for you, you might want to try Garlon. That's another product that you can use where you can paint it on. You have to be very careful with both of these products, of course, and use them according to the label. I've tried, just pulling it doesn't get rid of it. And even with the herbicide, you still probably will have to treat several times. And eternal vigilance is my byword for that.
And is it really bindweed or windweed?
Probably bindweed.
Oh, okay.
Field bindweed.
Yeah, field bindweed. It's in the it's in the same family as morning glories.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. We have Mary Lou in Appleton next. Hi, Mary Lou.
Good morning. My question is, I have a lot of cantaloupes growing in my garden,
mm-hmm.
and I was wondering, how do I know when they're ripe enough to pick?
Oh, boy. Okay, this is a little outside my area of expertise. What I remember Karen Delahoe talking about and reading was a couple of different things. One is to there's a little dent that's at the base of the stem, and you look for that dent, and when you see that, if you can separate the stem from the cantaloupe easily, then that's called slipping. And you know that it's ripe at that time. There's also a ground patch, which is where it lays on the ground, and when it turns from kind of a whitish or greenish color to more of a yellowish color.
Yeah,
that is also a help. And also they should smell melony.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only three ways that I know of, but there may be some others.
My dad always used to plunk them with his finger, and I never could understand. I mean, he could pick them invariably when they were ripe. He knew it, but he would plunk it and listen for the sound.
The sound. And I'm not sure what the sound is supposed to sound like.
I don't know.
Like.
Me, I don't know either. I don't know either. But those are all good ways to tell. You've given some good advice there, Lisa.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mary Lou. And Rick in Madison. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I planted 18 juniper bushes along our back lot line about 6 years ago. And I've always been worried to lose one. I've deep root seeded them for each year. And this year I lost three of them to the far end that's more shaded by a pine tree. And I'm assuming I'm not going to get them back.
No, they don't regrow from dead material very well.
I'm wondering if you have any recommendations about what I might plant there that's similar that grow better in the shade.
You're looking for a conifer?
Yeah, along the lot line there, something.
How tall?
5 to 6 feet, ideally.
Okay, and it's in partial shade?
Under a pine tree and a maple tree. It's very shaded.
Okay. You might want to try a yew, a Canada yew. That's about the only thing. There's a variety called Hicks that gets to be 6 to 8 feet tall. But because of all the root competition that's in there, and that may be, I mean, junipers like sun, they...
Right.
But and that may have been part of it, but the root competition may also be an issue. So you'll need to keep whatever's in there, you'll need to keep it watered.
Great. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thanks very much for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking gardening, all things gardening today with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Home Horticulture Educator. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in. Join us at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions. Jan and Nina has one for you. Lisa, let's go there. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I live on the west shore of Lake Winnebago between Oshkosh and Nina, and I have two what I think are an ornamental cherry tree of some type on the property. We've lived here over 30 years, and they were here when we arrived. This year, we've tried very hard to keep the trees watered and to try to get them through the drought. We have two of these trees. One is doing fine, but one, closest to the lakeshore, is all the leaves are turning yellow. It's dropping leaves like crazy. It looks like it's been defoliated. And I'm wondering if there's a way in the fall or the late summer here to provide something to rejuvenate it. I'd hate to lose it.
Hmm. Well, from your description, it may not be drought related. It could be a disease because ornamental cherries and things that are in that Prunus genus can be very disease prone. It almost sounds like it could possibly be some sort of foliar disease. So I'm not convinced that pruning is the best thing. Also, this is the worst time of year to do pruning.
Absolute worst.
For any kind of tree, the reason being that the pruning process actually stimulates new growth, and that can then get damaged or frozen off during the winter because it doesn't go into dormancy properly. I would wait until the dormant season to do any kind of pruning on it, but you might want to send a picture of the plant into your local extension office, or you might want to send a digital photo to Brian at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. It can be hard to tell just from a description whether it's drought related or whether it's a disease or maybe both.
Right, could be both.
Well, the thing is that we have two specimens. One is doing all right despite mm-hmm. the drought, but the other one is just
right.
horrible.
Yeah, so that makes me even more suspicious that it might be a disease problem instead of just a drought
right.
problem. And there is a terminal disease that's called fire blight. Now, your symptoms don't sound like that, but that one you have to, there's no cure for it except for continuing to prune it properly. And this is definitely not the time of year because you can spread
sure.
it by pruning. So in case it's something that might be spread like that, I would definitely wait till the dormant season. Try sending Brian a photo and see if
he's pretty good at it, at identifying from a photo. He's on next Friday on Garden Talk as well.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Daryl sent us a photo on my Facebook page. Again, go to the Larry Mueller Show to see some of these photos. He's wondering if this is a squash or a gourd. Very interesting.
Wow, it looks like a gourd
there.
To me.
Looks like a gourd. That's my guess, too.
Yeah, usually the squash doesn't have the ribs on it. Although, since it's young and just developing, it's kind of hard to tell.
Sure pretty.
Yeah.
Very pretty. Tom and McQuanigo. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello. I have two questions about planting boxes. Number one, can I use the new type of treated lumber without arsenic for planting boxes? And number two, if I use untreated lumber, is it all right to paint it with Thompson Water Seal?
Okay. Well, your first question, if you're talking about like pressure-treated wood,
yes,
is that what you're talking about? Yeah, you can use that. I'll tell you, at the teaching garden here at the Dane County office, what we have used is we've used decking that is made out of a composite plastic wood material. It's recycled plastic and wood put together, and you know that it's not going to rot. So that is one option. It's a little more expensive, though. Now, if you do use untreated lumber, I'm not really sure what's in the Thompson's water seal. I guess I'd have to know what the ingredients are to be sure that it's not going to leach into the soil. If it's some kind of oil, you're probably okay. But that's a really good question. I know we do have some kind of fact sheet about that, Larry, that I think is on Brian's website. It's a fact sheet rather than a publication. Maybe we can have Amanda.
Yeah,
take a look
and see if she can find that.
Yeah,
we'll see if we. Well, I'll have Amanda take a look and see if she can find that.
Yeah,
because that publication.
I'm not positive about that.
And where would I?
You could go online and take a look for yourself too. Go to the
Plant disease Diagnostic Clinic site.
And the title of it would be something like what?
Boy. It's been a while since I looked at that one.
It would be paint materials or something for...
It's something about raised beds, I think.
Okay.
We also have another publication at the Learning Store that does talk about container growing and raised beds and so on, and there may be some more information in that area too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank Thank you.
Yeah, there
but
you go.
But I do recommend also, though, that plastic wood composite.
That's really, yeah.
Yeah, it's really forever. Nice. Yeah, exactly. That's. I knew that I wasn't going to have a lot of grant money to be able to do it more than once, so I wanted to make sure that whatever I got was going to be able to hang in there a while.
Diane and Pepin bought a truckload of wheat straw to use for mulch, but noticed it has a lot of grass seed in it. She thinks it's crabgrass.
Oh, jeez.
Is there any way to safely use this in my garden? I don't.
Oh, my sympathies, Diane. Okay, what kind of garden, I guess, would be my question. If it was a vegetable garden, you probably wouldn't want to use any kind of, you know, you could use a pre-emergent because crabgrass seed, is an annual. So you could technically use something like preen. I hate to use preen in settings where you're going to have edible crops.
Yeah,
if it was for your perennial garden, you maybe could do that. But boy, that's tough. You might just have to bury the whole load pretty deeply, or hot compost it, and I do mean hot, mm-hmm. in order to get rid of that.
There you go. We haven't zucchinis haven't come up at all today, which surprises me because usually there's
this time of year
baseball bat sized zucchinis that people are trying to get rid of. Mary Bell called me, and Mary does a lot of food drying. And has written some books on it. She's done a lot of great work on it. But she has figured out a way to use those big zucchinis.
Oh, tell me.
She's got something she calls dried apple pie. So she takes a big zucchini, one that you can peel yet, mm-hmm. but peel it off, cut it in half, and seed it. So you got this big zucchini. Peel it off, cut it in half, and seed it. Then you soften it up, boil it, or mm-hmm. microwave it, or whatever, and then put it in a blender. And with the blender, you add applesauce, some sugar, some lemon juice, and cinnamon.
Hmm.
And then you blend that, and then you make roll-ups.
Oh.
Fruit roll-ups.
Oh.
And she calls it dried apple pie. And she said, kids just, well, everybody, she said, just loves it.
Wow.
And she's been 30 years trying to figure out how to use those great big zucchinis.
Yeah, you go on vacation, you come back, and there's
there
these.
They are. And she makes this, you have to do some food drying, but I've got a food dryer. I'm going to give this a try.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad that she shared that. I was talking to my my boss, Carrie Edgar, yesterday, and we were talking about, if you leave your car unlocked at this time of year, you might find it full of zucchinis and people leaving zucchinis on people's doorsteps. And so now Mary Bell has solved the problem.
Yeah, it's she didn't give me any amounts, but you can kind of figure that out, I think.
Yeah.
So it's the zucchini and the applesauce, sugar, lemon juice, and cinnamon.
Sounds easy to me.
And make a little roll-ups, and there you got your dried apple pie. Josh in Madison, thanks for calling. Hello to you.
Hi there. I have a question about a Pachysandra plant that I have in my front yard. It's a ground cover. It's an evergreen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The house and the yard were kind of designed to shade the Pachysandra so it doesn't get too much sun. But during the drought, it got more sun than it usually got, and now there's like big holes in it that kind of got burned away. And I'm wondering if there's something I can do to kind of help that come back. I tried watering it as much as I could during the drought when it was really super hot there. But now there's these big holes and there's kind of dead vines in there. Do I take those vines out? Do I kind of leave them in there to kind of act as sort of a natural mulch, or what should I do?
I would probably remove the vines. Now, there are some, hate to tell you this, but there are some diseases that hit Pachysandra. I'm assuming this is probably drought related. But what you might want to do is transplant some of the vines from areas where it survived better into the areas where it didn't, so that it can fill back in. If you notice when you're digging around, taking out the old vines, if you kind of use your fingernail and and scratch the old vines. If you see green in there, they might not be totally dead and they might come back. But I'd probably hedge my bets by either planting in some new plants and getting those started, because this is a fine time of year to do that, or transplant some of the old stuff.
Okay. Thank you. That sounds like it'll work. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Seal in Minocqua. Hi.
Yes, hi. We have a log home north of Minocqua, and last year we had a large, I think it was a fir or a balsam, just turned bright orange almost overnight and die. So we had to cut it down, and now I've noticed the one next to it has also got some orange foliage on it. Is there anything we can do to try to save it, or will it go the way the other one went?
Hmm. When you look at this orange, does orange powder come off on your fingers, or
you
is
know,
it just that's the
color?
Yeah,
it's just the color. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember anything coming off on our fingers, but I mean, it turns a bright orange, and you see this as you drive through the North Woods. You know, you'll see these large evergreens, and every now and then you'll see a bright orange one, and sure enough, the next time you drive by, the needles are gone, et cetera.
Yeah.
Boy, it might be a disease, in which case I would send some photos to Brian, or if it's drought damage, I would just keep it watered.
Yeah, I think you need to send a photo to Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
It really
needs to do that. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gardening can be such a pleasure, and depending on where we are in the season, lots of different things to take care of. And we're lucky to have a great generalist like Lisa Johnson in for this edition of Garden Talk. She's a Dane County UW Extension Home Horticulture Educator. Great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. And please join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or go to my Facebook page. Please post there at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo or ask a question. And Lisa, I'm looking at the page right now, and Jean has a photo and wondering what the plant is in this photo. Interesting plant.
Yeah, that looks to me like it is a giant Solomon's seal, which is a native plant. It does, it has paired white flowers in the spring, and it gets these blue berries where the flowers were in the fall. It is one that can be a bit spready in the home garden, and it has one heck of a root system, but it's a very nice native plant.
And Therese has one as well, a photo of, what was that, an ash?
I don't know. I was looking at that during the break, and it almost looked like an ash. But Therese, if you can send us another couple of views, I'd have a better shot at that. I can't quite tell what's going on there.
All right. Jim says he has a great use for big zucchinis. His chickens love them.
There you go.
I love the small ones, too. But I still like Mary Bell's idea about dried apple pie as her use for zucchini. I'll probably have to post that at some point.
Yeah.
I'll probably get back to her and get some amounts from her and try and post it. We've got an email. I'd like to do a do-over for some landscaping in my backyard. I've heard guests talk about how to clear out plants. I can pull plants and put down cardboard, but I'm wondering when to start this process and how long to keep the cardboard or mulch down through the spring to get past the seed germination process. Also, when to start planting healthy hostas and shade-loving perennial plants.
Okay. Well, it's going to depend on what kind of garden you're putting in. It sounds like you're putting in perennials.
Hostas and...
Yeah, hostas and so on. In that case, you can leave the cardboard and mulch in there and just mulch over the top of that and plant your plants right through that. You probably
take some,
need a,
or cut some holes in
yeah,
the
exactly,
cardboard.
Because the cardboard is going to disintegrate. Now, you can also follow that same sort of thing if you're putting in a vegetable garden. You don't want to put your cardboard too thick, particularly with the vegetable plants. But mm-hmm. yeah, I've seen that done before. You just use a what do you call that? A carpenter's knife and, mm-hmm. and cut through the cardboard and put a couple of inches of shredded bark mulch on top of it and
on top of the cardboard.
Yep,
yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah, and you can plant hostas right.
No, hostas, yeah, hostas are very tough. They're one of my favorite plants. And you can certainly, fall is a great time for planting. You can plant those right now. Now, for shade-loving, it has shade-loving prairie plants. Most of the time, prairie plants are not shade-loving because a prairie is defined as having less than one tree per square mile. But there are some savanna plants which can overlap with that prairie plant category that you might want to look at. But if you meant to say shade-loving perennial plants, yeah, you can plant a lot of those at this time of year.
Absolutely.
And you can even get some deals at this time of year, too.
Yeah, absolutely. We were planting. We went to the Daylily Society. We talked about Daylilies a week ago. And then this last weekend, they had their sale at Olbrich, and we got over there, having to get there on Sunday. I think we bought 10 or so plants. And Sunday, the plants were all half price, so it was kind of a nice. So we planted, just got them in last night, so they sat on the porch in a cool spot for a couple of days, mm-hmm. but they're going to be fine.
Oh, daylilies are also very tough, and they're such wonderful plants. Oh, they give a lot of color.
Beautiful plants. Margo and Poinette. Hi, thanks for calling. Margo, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, thanks for taking my call. When we bought the farm, there was a plant growing here, and everybody admired it, and so we let it grow. And so now 50 years down the line, we're tired of it.
Yeah.
But this plant is, they called it Martha Washington. Now, I don't know what, if that's just where that name came from, but it starts out, it's got a massive root to it, like a woody root, and it grows 6 and 7 and maybe even 8 feet tall, and it's a bamboo stalk. It has a cluster flower I've been chopping it off this year, so it's not going to get a flower this year because everything that comes up, I chop it off because I want to get rid of it. And I think it's going to take me 5 years, if not more, to get rid of it because it has a massive root system and it spreads easily and fast. And so
is the stem hollow?
Yes.
Okay, that's Japanese knotweed, and it is an invasive species, to tell you.
Yeah.
No kidding?
No.
Hard to get rid of.
Yeah, it is very hard to get rid of, and you're right about that root system. That's a real tough tough thing to get rid of.
Yeah, but that's what it is. Huh?
Yeah, that's probably what it is. You said it. The stems look like bamboo. Do they have red at the nodes?
Yes.
Okay. And
well, when we break it off in the fall, when the year is over, like maybe in late November, December, we put it on the burn pile, and then it just snaps, crackles, and pops like fireworks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
really, it's fun to put on your bonfire.
Just don't stand too close because it can act like a flamethrower with those hollow stems.
Yes, right, that's right.
And big leaves.
Yes, great big leaves. Yep. And that cluster, it just, you know, the bees, it's kind of like their last hoorah at the end of summer. And you know, of course, they just swarm around that. And we had about 20 feet of it growing in front of a building and something like that. And then we had a couple of patches around the yard, which some of them we didn't start. They just started. And,
yeah, they do that, unfortunately.
Yes, they do.
And it has white flowers?
Yep, it has kind of a beige-ish white color flower, and it's like clustery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Japanese knotweed.
It doesn't smell bad. you know, it's a nice little flower, but you know, it's not a beautiful plant, but it's kind of like if you wanted to divide a spot from another spot, you know, we would mow it constantly to keep mm-hmm. it back.
Yeah, that's but, one of the ways you can try and kill it is by mowing, but you have to
get the roots out.
Yeah, you're probably going to need to use an herbicide to get rid of it, and it's not going to die all at once. You'll probably need several treatments.
Yeah.
Garlon is one of the chemicals that is recommended. The other thing, again, you can try mowing it several times. You can try digging up the root system, but make sure that you don't compost any of that material because any little piece of that root can start the whole plant over again.
Yeah, I've been throwing those roots in the barnyard. That just means I'm going to just put it in the barnyard.
No.
We have a publication. If you go to the DNR website, they have a publication on Japanese knotweed that you might want to take a look
at. Okay, they're spelling knotweed, K-N-O-T?
That's right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll have to look that up. That's interesting.
Well, good mm-hmm. luck with that.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right. Mike and... she's looking for a lot of work to get rid of that.
Yeah.
Mike and Mauston, hello.
Hello. I'm calling about crab apple trees. I had two of them in my yard, and one of them passed away this spring. There was a bunch of holes bored into the bark.
Okay.
And I was kind of wondering if you had any advice on how to save the other one.
Is the other one showing any symptoms?
No, not yet.
Okay. Usually when we have holes in the bark, it's due to various boring-type insects. There's an apple borer, an ash... Well, there's a native ash borer, too, that can attack a number of different trees. It's different from emerald ash borer, but there are various boring-type insects, and typically they are going to attack trees that are under stress. So if you can make sure that your tree is properly watered and fertilized, make sure that you're not growing grass under it, make sure that it's mulched. You don't want the mulch touching the trunk, and it should be no deeper than 3 inches. But if you mulch out about 3 feet away from the trunk in a circle, that'll help as well. So just trying to keep the plant from being stressed will go a long ways.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Joe in Brownsville, Minnesota. Hi.
Yeah, hi there. I had a question about arborvitaes. I planted some hostas underneath some arborvitaes a couple years ago, and they've just kind of struggled along and not done too much. And, of course, this year they look really terrible because of the dry weather and stuff. But mm-hmm. Is there a better plant, or is there a way to get that plant to actually, you know, thrive in those sorts of conditions, because it's, you know, really dry and, you know, high acid soil?
The thing with arborvitae is that they have a really massive and very dense root system, and so it's really hard to get things to do well underneath them. You might be able to get away with something like a plant called Lamium. That's Lamium. It's in the mint family, and it's a ground cover. You're still going to have to water it pretty thoroughly to keep it, to get it, you know, established. But it's really tough. It's like trying to grow plants under silver maples. The root system just tends to crowd everything out. And, you know, while hostas are pretty tough and normally I'd recommend them under just about anything, I have problems with my hostas under silver maples, and I wouldn't even try it underneath an arborvitae. So I would try Lamium. Might be something that you might be able to get away with.
Mm-hmm.
What if a person went and threw a bunch of compost in there, you know, to, you know, lessen that root mass? And
that'll help.
Went that route.
That'll help. I wouldn't pile it, you know, too deep. A couple 3 inches deep is as deep as I would go, and that'll that'll help with the moisture situation. But just the physical mass of the roots tends to crowd out other root systems.
Sure.
So, you know, go ahead and try that.
Could I get by with doing that without actually transplanting the hostas that I have there already? Could I just, you know, throw the compost in there and will the hostas go ahead and just, you know, still thrive and still live? Or?
I don't know about thrive.
They'll live.
But they'll probably live.
Okay.
You know, you could try it both ways. You could, in some areas, try digging up the hostas, put some more soil in, and, you know, moving out some of the actual mass of the root mm-hmm. system that's already there, and then putting the hostas in with the compost. And you can try some others with just putting the compost on the top and seeing if that helps. Certainly, the compost will help as a mulch to keep it a little bit more moist.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I'll try that. I'll try that other plant, too.
Thanks Alrighty. For calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Janice in Grafton next. Hi, Janice.
Hi. Thank you for calling. I call. I'm wondering when is the proper time to prune boxwood. I'm assuming it's fall, but not now.
No, I would actually, I believe boxwood is supposed to be pruned in the spring.
Oh, okay.
There, with most of the evergreen species, there are a couple of times. Some of them have two times that you can prune them during the season. Like yews put on two different growth spurts. There's one in the early spring, and then there's one kind of in around June. And I believe boxwood is supposed to be pruned in early spring, like in March or April.
Okay, well, thank you. I should have done it before, but I didn't get around to it.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Janice, for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. I have an open line. Get you on at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to John in Eau Claire. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks. Why wouldn't you want to, you said you didn't want to use preen, you know, in a vegetable garden before for...
There, I believe there are some, and you need to check the label. They didn't used to have preen that was available for vegetable gardens. I think they do now, but it's a pre-emergent. So if you're trying to plant seeds, you know, the chemical doesn't know the difference between a weed seed and a vegetable seed. So if you're going to use it to prevent annual weeds from seeding and you put it in a vegetable garden, you're also going to not be able to plant any vegetable seeds.
I see. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate your call. And we have some more callers online. Let's go to the phones. And Beth and Amory is next. Beth, hi.
Hi. This summer I grew some loofahs, and I have a lot of them, like loofah sponges, but I just don't know when to harvest them.
Oh, well, I don't know when to harvest them either, to tell you the truth.
We have such a great show every year, and I'm trying to...
With the Vickers?
No,
with
the vegetables. There's a couple who raise and just do just an absolutely wonderful job with them, and we talk every year once, and I'm embarrassed to say I can't think of her name.
That
happens sometimes.
Gourd girl, or
yes,
or, yeah,
the gourd girl,
yeah,
the gourd gal. If you go online and just type in the gourd gal, you're going to get to her website for sure. And on that site, she has a lot of great information about gourds and stuff. And there really is you got to be kind of careful when you do things relating to that, the loofah plants, for sure.
Right. Yeah, because, they are just huge this year. And I've never had so many of them this year. So I'm pretty excited, but I just don't know when's best to harvest them.
Well, look.
So the gourd gal.
Yeah, go to the gourd gal.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, and it's really embarrassing when you can't think of.
Maybe Amanda can check that for us and let us know.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. Susan in Waupaca, hi.
Hi. My question is, I am going to be the proud recipient of a moonflower.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And it is, the plant itself, I guess it's almost a shrub, about 3 to 4 feet tall. And it has beautiful, elongated, almost like a trumpet mm-hmm. blossom on it.
Yep, that opens in the kind of the evening.
Oh, gosh, the smell is wonderful.
Yes, yes.
What I don't know anything about them. I have been doing some research, but I'm wondering how transplantable it will be. I have the equipment. My son has the equipment to move it. And my other question is, how will it tolerate being transplanted? But then the other question, they have these numbers of spiky green, I'm guessing they're seed pods, all
right.
over the plant.
Mm-hmm.
Those are actually
poisonous. So I would remove those and get rid of them. There's an alkaloid in them that is toxic. Now you know that this is a it's an annual, so it's not a perennial. Although they often do come back from seed.
Okay.
So
this one right now is growing alongside an old barn building,
mm-hmm.
and nobody's planted anything there for a long time, so it must have been dormant.
Or come up from seed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you can, like I say, you can transplant it, but the season is coming to an end soon,
right.
and so I don't know that it's going to have time to establish and look very good for the end of the season.
What about the seed pods, though? Even though they are poisonous, can I propagate?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can collect the seeds. You can scatter the seeds in spring. You could also probably scatter some of them in fall because I don't remember. I think they do need some kind of cold period to come up.
Okay.
I'd have to check on that, but
mm-hmm.
They do form quite an impressive sized plant.
Yes, they do. And are there numerous seeds inside this pod?
Depends on what you mean by numerous. There aren't hundreds.
Oh, okay. But then it is a pod, and there are seeds inside that I can use for propagating.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the pod itself is poisonous?
Oh, well, the seeds are.
The seeds are.
Yeah, the pod may be. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I believe it's a hallucinogen, if I'm not incorrect there.
Is there some place specific I can go and look for more information on the moonflower?
Sure. If you just Google moonflower, you will get more than... I don't think Extension has any particular publications on it, but... You may be able to find an Extension site from another state that has materials on it or a botanic garden.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, those are cool plants.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Speaking of botanical gardens, I'll be at the Green Bay Botanical Garden.
Oh, that's a beautiful garden.
Beautiful garden. We're going to be there tomorrow.
Wow.
With a group of folks who I went to England with.
Oh.
So we're having a little reunion.
Oh.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. And so we're looking forward to that, driving up tomorrow morning and might even drive back tomorrow night. We're debating as to whether we have some things to do on Sunday, so we might have to come back. But I'd just as soon stay overnight and come back the next day.
Yeah, there's cool things to do up there.
Lots of cool things to do in Green Bay. And Lisa, I hope you're going to have a good weekend. We have lots of good things going on.
We've got actually a Master Gardener work day tomorrow in the teaching garden. So I'll be doing that.
Oh, so I'm getting your fingers dirty a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you do that a lot. Lisa, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Thanks for asking me.
Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Definitely we will have her back and visit with her again. I'll be off tomorrow, or on Monday, I should say. Rob Ferret filling in for me. We'll talk about brain tumors at 11 o'clock, and then the weather guys will join us at 11:45. Thanks for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.